live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I want to start with the NFL trade deadline, because yesterday that sort of snuck up on us all. Probably because the NFL trade deadline has not been a thing. The NFL trading deadline was never a thing, at least not until now. And it seemed to me, because that was not a thing, it was always a missed opportunity for the Shield. Because we're talking about a league that manages to dominate the sports calendar 12 months out of the year. A league that has made a national holiday out of 300-pound dudes slamming some spandex on and running around orange cones. I mean, literally, anything the NFL does makes news. Anything the NFL does forces us to stop what we're doing and watch. Yet they could never seem to take advantage of the trade deadline, which in other sports is a big thing. Well, they finally figured the whole thing out. They figured out that if you move it back a couple of weeks and the teams themselves finally realize that there's value in the compensatory picks for the players that they were not going to re-sign, you figure all of that out, it all comes together, and then hell breaks loose. And all of a sudden, the trade deadline is a thing. All of a sudden, people are paying attention. All of a sudden, deals that matter are getting done. So, a quick rundown from yesterday. Houston sends a 4th and a 7th to Denver for Demaryius Thomas and a 7th rounder. So, starting right there, Thomas may not be the player he once was, but you know the guy's going to be rejuvenated playing with Deshaun Watson and for a team that is actually playing for something. And it's a good pickup for the Texans, who needed somebody to play opposite of DeAndre Hopkins after Will Fuller went down for the rest of the year. Denver benefits because they get DT's contract off the books. So I like that deal. Then you've got Detroit trading Golden Tate to Philadelphia for a 3rd-round pick. Tate took to Twitter to announce, quote, "It's been real, Detroit. I'll love you forever. Philly, Philly, let's get it." Carson Wentz then shouts right back, quote, "Let's roll, my man. Excited to compete with you. Hashtag fly, Eagles, fly." So adding a veteran physical receiver to Philadelphia as they start to put things together this season is a good move, except it does not come cheaply. Now, they didn't stupidly pay him the way the Cowboys did with that first-round pick from Amari Cooper, but Philadelphia did give up a 3rd-rounder for Tate. So in order for that move to pay off, they're going to have to re-sign him in the offseason. That's not a lock. Or, instead of that, just repeat. Then the move works whether or not they re-sign him or not. I like that move. They get a good veteran presence. It's going to help Carson Wentz, but they did give up a 3rd-rounder for him. So either you re-sign him or you make another deep run. And back to Dallas for 1 minute. Jerry Jones traded a 1st-round pick for Amari Cooper. I mean, what the hell? I know he's younger than Tate. I know he does some things that are different than Tate. But in terms of pure production, there's no comparison whatsoever. Tate is on pace for another 1,000-yard season, which would be his 4th in 5 years. Cooper is on pace for maybe a 600-yard season. Maybe. I mean, you want to talk about a shakedown. John Gruden can't do anything right, yet he absolutely abused Jerry Jones in that deal. He worked Jera. Meantime, Green Bay trades Ty Montgomery to Baltimore for a 7th-round pick. Ty Montgomery for a 7th-rounder. And let me say, I am a big Ty Montgomery fan. If you listen to the program, you know that. I've always liked him. I still like him, even after that meltdown against the Rams. But make no mistake, they didn't trade Montgomery. They fired Montgomery. He had to start over anew someplace else because there was no way the Packers could keep him after he fumbled away any chance for Aaron Rodgers to bring Green Bay back against the Rams. I mean, putting it on the ground is one thing. That'll happen. But doing it after you were reportedly told to take a knee is another. And it's still another if, in fact, he went rogue and did it because he was unhappy with the way he was used earlier in the game. Now, Montgomery says that's not how that was. That's not why he brought the ball out of the end zone. He says that's not what that was. He denied it. So we really don't know what his motivation was for bringing it out, but I know this. He could not stay in Green Bay after he did that, and Baltimore is getting a nice player for next to nothing at all. So I know why Green Bay moved him, and I know why Baltimore picked him up. What's not as clear to me is why Green Bay sent Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to Washington for a 4th-rounder. Now, that's a nice move for the Redskins. He's a good fit there. instantly gives Washington one of the best safety combos in the NFL. And while everybody in the NFC East is trying to improve their offense, Washington is looking to load up on defense. They're looking to win the division. But again, what are the Packers doing with that move? Green Bay's got youth. Green Bay has talent in the secondary. But now they're 3-3-1, and they're about to head to Foxborough without their best safety. So to me, that move does not make a hell of a lot of sense. They must have a lot of talent, or I should say, a lot of confidence in that young secondary, and believe that those guys are going to step up, because from the outside, it kind of feels like, when you move a player like that, it kind of feels like you're giving up on the season. And if they're doing that, they shouldn't be doing that, because you never give up on any season when you've got Aaron Rodgers, and especially in his prime. Now, there weren't all trades. Some of the trades did not get done. Jacksonville, for instance, traded Dante Fowler to the Rams because the Rams, weren't going to make another big move before the deadline. But they did not move Blake Bortles. They didn't trade for a quarterback. Speaking of quarterbacks, how about Buffalo? Buffalo signed a wide receiver in Terrell Pryor, who may now be the best quarterback option they have. No names mentioned. I'm looking at you, Nathan Michael Peterman. Now, what I don't want to do is kick NMP when he's down. I'm not here to pile on. But I think it's a pretty fair question, right? Is a wide receiver walking into the facility in the middle of the week, having never looked at a Bills playbook, still a better option at quarterback than Nate Peterman? I'm not even trying to clown the guy. I'm not even trying to mock the guy. I'm not even trying to talk bleep. That's not even hot lava. It's just real, and it's fair. Look at their quarterback ratings. That tells you everything you need to know. Like Nate, Peterman seems like a really good dude. He's just not a good quarterback. We are joined by the double champ, Daniel Cormier. Daniel, good to have you back. How are you?
How you doing, Jim? Good to be back, man.
DC,
as always.
Good to have you back. Thanks so much. So it's Wednesday. You and I have done this a number of times, but it's midweek, the week of a fight. Fight week. So how are you feeling right now? How are you living, and how has camp gone?
I feel great, man. The camp is going well. It couldn't have gone better for the amount of time that we had, you know, and I'm excited to show that we essentially pulled off a miracle in 3.5-4 weeks to get to where I am today to fight Derek Lewis.
We're talking to Daniel Cormier. So because it was on short notice and you're working kind of a miracle, you used that word yourself, DC, what was it like? How did you approach that camp? And exactly what did you do to make this thing happen?
I just worked hard, man. Once they told me the date, I just really, really went to work. I worked my butt off. Me and my coaches, we trained and we trained and we trained and we trained. And we feel as though we got a pretty good idea of what opponent we had and how we were to approach this fight. And I think that we got it done.
See, the thing is, in terms of the opponent, if you go back to the setup for the fight, you got a call a while back to see if you'd be interested in fighting somebody who was not Derek Lewis. They didn't tell you who that fight would be against. So what was that conversation like, and who did you think that they were thinking of?
I don't know. I didn't know who it was. They just asked me, and I was just starting my rehab, so my hand was still all jacked up. But when they finally gave me a person, it was Derek Lewis.
So Derek Lewis, Daniel, would be the first to admit that he is not a perfect fighter, that he has flaws. You talk to him, he'll tell you that. When you watch him fight, what do you see?
I see a big guy with a lot of belief and trust in himself. A guy that really believes in his right hand. And believes that he can end a fight with one punch.
Well, he has too, right? He's done that, so I know why he believes that. You know, it seems to me when you look at him, he might have flaws and he might not be the best technician, but man, this guy is fearless. He's utterly fearless. So is that maybe more concerning than a guy who is a technician, who is going to make adjustments, as opposed to somebody who goes in there like him, who's not afraid, who knows that he can end a fight with one shot?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been in there with the best fighters in the world. So obviously there's a difference. But I don't know if I've fought anyone that's this dangerous at all times. He's super dangerous at all times.
All right, so in terms of the matchup, when you look at him, what are the weaknesses in his game that you feel like you can exploit, that you would look to exploit?
You know, just the fact that he's not very busy. He tries to really measure his pace because he does not have the best cardio. You know, so because he does not have the best cardio, he tries to measure his pace and stuff like that. I think him trying to manage that cardio is going to be a problem for him.
Jungle gamers, listen up. Let me talk to you for a moment about Bethesda Game Studios, the award-winning creators of Skyrim and Fallout 4. They welcome you now to Fallout 76, the online prequel where every surviving human is a real person. Work together or not to survive. Under the threat of nuclear annihilation. Under the threat of nuclear annihilation, you will experience the largest, most dynamic world ever created in the legendary Fallout universe. Reclamation Day 2102. 25 years after the bombs fall, you and your fellow vault dwellers, chosen from the nation's best and brightest, emerge into post-nuclear America. You can play solo, or you can join together as you explore, quest, build, and triumph against the wasteland's greatest threats. Fallout 76 will be available worldwide on Wednesday, November 14th. Pre-order now at participating retailers and play the beta. Games play best on Xbox One. Daniel Cormier joining us. He is the champ, in fact, the double champ, and he is going to defend at UFC 230. At the very top of the interview, Daniel, I introduced you as the UFC heavyweight champ and the UFC light heavyweight champ. How much does it mean to you to be holding both those belts at the same time and to now be the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world?
It's amazing. It's amazing to me. I am so honored to have that thing. You know, I've always wanted to do things that are special, and being a double champion is special.
You know, you've worked extremely hard to get where you are right now, and to be honest, you've taken some crap. In fact, more than a little bit of crap, Daniel, along the way, but you've always handled it with total class. Is there any sense of satisfaction for you now that you're on top of two divisions and you're on top of that sport, given the journey you took to get there?
It's a ton of satisfaction. I mean, I never could have imagined when I started doing this that I would be a UFC double champion, but here I am today. Through hard work and commitment, there's a lot of satisfaction, not just a little bit.
We're talking to Daniel Cormier. So what about the light heavyweight belt? Where do things stand with that belt, and what are your plans for it?
They're taking the belt from me in December for Jones and Gustafson to fight, but that was with the contingency that I would get the first title fight if I wanted to. So we'll see what I want to do. If I decide to go back to 205, I can. But as of right now, the only guy I would do that for is John Jones.
John Jones. I was going to say, I mean, could there be a plan where if you win the fight on Saturday that you then Fessner and retire, or do you want that shot at John Jones?
It's my option. You know, that's the beauty in being a double champ is that I have options. I can fight them both.
You can fight them both. So would you push retirement back? What are you thinking about in terms of retirement? Because you made it pretty clear that you want to go out at a certain time. You don't want to stay too long.
You know, I could fight them both, or I could just fight. I want to fight them both. I'm sorry, Jim. Let me correct that. I want to fight them both. I just have to measure which one means more to me right now.
Can you measure that yet? Do you know the answer to that question? I mean, of those two guys, two totally different guys and different fights, which one does mean more to you right now?
You know, competitively, obviously it's Jones, but financially, you know, Lesnar brings the dollars, man, and we're prize fighters. So I need to weigh which one I'm going to approach. But, you know, the reality of the situation is when you start to do stuff like this and think ahead a little bit, like Lesnar or Jones, which guy, the problem is if I don't win the fight Saturday, none of it's possible, right? There is no Lesnar. There is no Jones. So I'm really trying to keep my focus on Derek Lewis, who I'm fighting this weekend.
I get that. Cormier v. Lewis coming up this weekend, UFC 230. Hey, Daniel, before you go, you fight out of AKA in San Jose, which is the same gym as Habib. What did you make of his fight against Conor McGregor and then everything that happened after that fight?
I thought the fight was tremendous. I mean, I thought he fought well. He followed the game plan that was set in front of him by the coaches to a T, and he did his thing. But the reality is, I never thought that that beef was going to be over, Jim, at the end of the athletic competition. It was too real. It was too much. It was never going to be enough. These guys weren't going to be okay hugging and shaking hands at the end of the fight. And as you saw, that was the case. You know, sometimes fighters fight, and that's what you got. That's why you see basketball players fight at times, football players fight at times. There's a lot of emotion in sport, and I think the emotions really ran rampant on October 6th.
Building pros know what's up. Ferguson, that's what's up. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. All right, today's Halloween. I should probably address it, right? We're into hour number three. It is Halloween. Halloween means a couple of things around here. Number one, no costumes. We've been over this before. Costumes are for kids. If you're not a kid, don't be a bag. It's not that hard. All you have to do is check out your ID. If you were born before 2006, do not go getting dressed up. Thankfully, nobody on the other side of the glass bagged it up, so I do not have to break off any of them. And no morons, I don't need your tweets or emails saying, what do you mean your crew didn't show up in costume, Rome? What about that dude rocking the Chael Sonnen mask behind the glass? What's his deal, Rome? Can't you see through the glass, Rome? That guy's got a costume. Hey, Rome, you say no costumes, but how about that tool that you have working for you who showed up dressed like that dope Ross from Friends? What about him, Rome? That guy's got no costume either? No, he doesn't. That's not a costume. Neither of them are wearing costumes. And neither should any of you if you're over the age of 12. It's a holiday for kids, not bags. Not bags trying to somehow get through another day on a job and a life that they hate. It's a kid's holiday. The second thing that comes to mind when you think about Halloween in the jungle, Alvin's spooky mix. And I can't believe this is true, but this is the 8th edition of the mix. And for those who don't know how this came to be, let me get you caught up really quickly. Back in 2011, when my kids were a lot younger, I decided to really get into Halloween one year. Instead of having a bad attitude about that, I thought that I would embrace the suck. Embrace the suck that is Halloween. So I was all about it. I went all out. Part of my going all out meant stepping my game up at the house. So I commissioned Lil Alvy way back in the day to make me a spooky mix that I could drop into an MP3 player, hide it behind a rock, and really set the mood for any trick-or-treaters who hiked the hill to get to my pile of bricks. I said it 8 years ago, and I'll say it right now. The mix was so damn spooky. Literally nobody knocked on my door all night long. No one. And after listening back to it for the past 8 years, I don't really blame anybody for turning around and running right back down that hill. The best part about the mix is that Alvin continues to add to it every single year. In 2011, if memory serves, I think we had like 23 sound bites. In 2018, there are now 43 sound bites. So if you want to play along, get ready to tweet as many of the drops as you can identify in this mix. All right, so here it is. In honor of Halloween, I give to you Alvy's Spooky Mix, Volume 8.
I'm not afraid of you!
Someone call someone!
You better don't.
Get!
Pretty scary stuff, right? If you want to be left undisturbed tonight, drop that mix on your phone. Get connected to a Bluetooth speaker. Blast that thing out on your front doorstep. Nobody comes within 50 feet of your house. Trust me. Maybe you missed that. Do you need to hear that one more time? How many of the 43 sound bites were you able to pull? Start tweeting them at Jim Rome. One more time, in case you were not able to capture that and you want that for tonight, I'll give you this again.
I'm not afraid of you!
Someone call someone!
You better don't.
Get!
On top of that, as part of this monster Halloween block, you're not going to believe this. There's a legitimate ghost story in the news. A legitimate ghost story for Halloween. It's not some kind of mislead, misdirection, setup. An actual legitimate ghost story that's making the rounds all the way from the UK. What the hell? It's Halloween. So I'm going to allow this, but in order to set it up properly, let's go back to December of 2017. About 11 months ago, a 27-year-old British woman named Amethyst. Amethyst Realm was a guest on a talk show called This Morning with Philip and Holly. A morning show. This Morning with Philip and Holly. Amethyst was there because she had recently been caught cheating on her fiancé, but not with a friend, not with the mailman, not with the pool man, not with a human at all. Turns out she felt the presence of a ghost in her house. And when her fiancé left for work one day, she stepped out on her old man with a ghost.
You decided that you would take it to the next level, and you dressed in a very sexy negligee,
yeah.
And you went into the spare bedroom and turned the lights off and waited.
I did, yes.
And what happened?
I waited and waited for a while, and then I got a little bit worried. I thought maybe I'd scared it off by being too keen.
Oh, okay.
And then sort of just as I'd given up hope and was starting to fall asleep, it came to me. And
what happened?
I don't know what I can say on TV.
Well, you just had to, like, wait.
You had sex?
Yeah, I had sex with the ghost.
With a ghost?
Yeah. Yes.
She got with a ghost. She got down with a ghost. I told you I had a ghost story. So the interview continues, and Amethyst reveals that she's had 20 different sexual ghost partners, and she ended up breaking off the engagement with her fiancé. So go ahead right now and pour one out for the dude who's got to tell his friends and family that he was broken off for ghosts. Imagine that dude trying to return the ring to a jewelry store because he got kicked to the curb for ghosts. 20 ghosts. And if you thought that was just some sort of phase for Amethyst, you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong as her poor ex-fiancé.
No need for a boyfriend or husband or anything like that of the humankind. You are happy now. This is for you the way you want your life to be.
Dearly, I'd like to find one that I would like to settle down with and spend the rest of my life with. But I'll never go back to men.
Waiting for Mr. Right.
Yeah.
She said, I'll never go back to men. I'll never go back to men. No, what you meant to say, Amethyst, is you'll never go back to humans. She said she's never going back to men, and she's looking to settle down to find Mr. Right Ghost. Which brings me to the present day, because a lot can happen in about a year. On a recent vacation to Australia, Amethyst met the ghost of her dreams on a hike. She told the newspaper The Sun that the ghost appeared to her from a bush on the hiking trail, and they connected instantly. Listen, I'm not that spiritual. I don't know how they do things in the spirit world, but in the real world, in the human world, if you jump out on a woman from behind a bush, you're getting maced and you're going to jail. It's creepy. It's criminal. But apparently there are different rules for ghosts. Apparently if a ghost does it, it's hot. It's fine. And apparently Amethyst, not only was she not going to mace that ghost or press any charges, she thought it was cool. She was into it. They started to date. Not only did they start to date, but on the plane back to England, the ghost apparently surprised her by sneaking on board and going home with her.
What are you feeling? Are you being touched? Are you being held? Are you being kissed? Are you being... Or is it just conversation?
Sometimes, yeah. And it's just like a normal relationship.
So you get excited, you get turned on by this relationship?
Sometimes,
yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, you did say that actually on the flight back from Australia, you did actually go into the loo and do what some people do.
A member of a Mile High Club, yeah.
And why did you need to go into the loo to do that if nobody can see that presence there?
Because, I don't know, wouldn't be able to get into it on the seats, I guess.
So even then you felt you needed to be private?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, give it to that host, right? Like, why? She just said, we got after it. It was the Mile High Club. That me and the ghost got it on an airplane. And the host said, well, why did you have to go into the loo? It's a ghost. Nobody could see the ghost. So the only thing more bizarre or more out there, and I can't wait for the phone call from the suit, like, Rome, did you really do a take on your sports talk show about a ghost and some woman having sex with a ghost? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I might have a hard time selling that, but not as bad as having that person in studio and interviewing her about it, like that show. Like, they literally did a full sit-down with her. Anyway, on behalf of the airplane, thank you very much for refraining from making love to that ghost in your seat and then having the decency to take that into the bathroom. The Sun also reports, this is a newspaper now, a legitimate, well, as legitimate as the Sun is. The Sun reports that they're a very happy couple and they're now engaged. Amethyst told the paper, quote, there was no going down on one knee. He doesn't have knees. Good one, Amethyst. Amethyst also told This Morning with Phil and Holly that the two are hoping to have a baby sometime soon.
You feel that you're going to connect to such a degree, am I right, that you will have a spiritual or physical baby?
I hope so.
What yeah. Spiritual or physical?
I would hope physical. So I've been looking into phantom pregnancies, and I believe that a phantom pregnancy is actually a real pregnancy, but you have a phantom inside you. Rather than a human baby.
All right, then. A phantom pregnancy. Hopefully the ghost is not like Gordon Hayward and does not have a preference on gender. That would be an awkward video. Is Ghosty happy? Ghosty's always happy.
Is Daddy happy?
Casper's always happy. If you've been thinking about getting down, head on over to MyBookie and get it started. Remember this. Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I tell my people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code Rome to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code Rome when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. It is a CBS game. Quarterback Terry Wilson is my guest. Terry, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing good. How about you?
Terry, I'm great. Nice to visit with you. And you've got that enormous game against Georgia coming up, of course. But let me ask you about that win this past weekend. And that was something because the incredible win over Missouri looked like this. The offense was not clicking the way you would have liked in the second half. It seems to me it would have been pretty easy for everything to fall apart. But you guys never panicked. You never lost your heads. What was the mood like among the offensive players when things were not going well? And what were you telling your teammates?
When things weren't going well, we had came together as a whole offense on the sideline, and you know, a few of the leaders, we brought everybody together, and we just told them, hey, we got to pick it up, we got a chance. After Lynn Bowden that took that punt return back, you know, we had a spark in us, and we had to go out there and execute. We had to go down there and move the ball, and so we had got everybody's mindset, you know, that hey, we can win this game. We just got to execute and go out there and do what we're supposed to. to do.
All right, to reset that moment, you mentioned Lynn Bowden. You were down 14-3 in the fourth quarter. He returned that punt 67 yards. We just showed it on CBS Sports Network. I mean, he just blew right by everybody. What was that moment like for the team?
It was huge. And like I said, you know, it was definitely a boost for everybody's confidence. Just to see that happening, I mean, the sideline went crazy. Everybody's faces, you know, everybody was just so rattled. We were like, oh, yeah, we're back in the game. We just got to go out there and just move the ball. So just seeing Lynn Bowden run that touchdown back, it just brought a really good feeling to us. And we felt comfortable, and, you know, we just had to go out there and execute and, you know, just finish it up.
Comfortable is the key word here. Terry Wilson joining us, because then you get the ball back on your own 19 with less than 90 seconds left. You're down 14-9, but watching you looked really comfortable. You seemed like you were incredibly calm in a pressure situation. Did it feel that way to you, or were you feeling the energy of the moment, and were you just able to kind of keep it under control?
Well, I don't think I felt any pressure because we practice 2 minutes all the time here at practice, and you know, our coaches do a great job on keeping us ready for those situations. So when we go out there, you know, we can execute it, and everybody knows their assignment. Everybody knows, you know, hey, we got to get out of bounds and, you know, just play smart football. Coach Stoops does a great job on, you know, just getting our IQ high. And so when those situations come, you know, we're ready and can move the ball and, you know, not just looking on the sideline, you know, waiting on signals or waiting on anything. We can just go out there and play free. And I just felt like when I was out there, I was just letting it rip. And, you know, moving at that fast tempo, I feel like that's a big part of my game. I like to go fast, and I like to move the ball down the field. So, I mean, it looked like it was easy out there, but I feel like just practicing helped me get through that.
We're talking Kentucky football. Quarterback Terry Wilson, my guest. All right, so when you drive down the field, you've got 4 seconds left. You hit Ahmad Wagner in the back corner of the end zone, but he was going out of bounds as time expired, but there was a flag for PI on the play. You get another shot with no time left on the clock. You said initially the plan was to get the ball to Benny Snell, but tight end C.J. Conrad said, let's run my play. So what was that play, and what did you see on that play?
Well, yeah, the play was, we call it grip. And it's CJ's play. I mean, and he does a great job on running that. But what I seen was, you know, coming to the line from that timeout that we had, I seen man, and I seen CJ on probably like a smaller safety. And I was like, yeah, CJ's going to kill this dude. And he ran his route so perfectly. It felt like slow motion when I let the ball go. And watched it go into CJ's hand. You know, he ran the perfect route. I mean, we do this all the time in practice, and I feel like it's like that every time we run it. So I was feeling really comfortable and confident that he was going to, you know, get open, and we were going to win the game.
We're talking to Terry Wilson. That's exactly what happened. I mentioned Benny Snell. I had him on the show, Terry, a little bit earlier this season. Man, he came off great. I liked him so much. I really loved the conversation. What's he like as a teammate? What's he mean to the team?
You know, he's a really, really good dude. That's my boy, and he's so confident and so passionate about his game. Everybody loves Benny. I mean, he puts the team on his back when he needs to, and I mean, when things are going right, you know, they look to Benny. He's always there, and he's always willing to put his, you know, his body on the line for the team. He's a team first guy. And I feel like all he cares about is winning, you know, and that's the right attitude to have, and just wanting to be better. You could tell he always wants to, you know, succeed. He stays late after practice, 30 minutes after practice every day, you know, just to work on his craft. And so, I mean, that stuff is contagious, and, you know, that's just somebody you want on your team.
Kentucky-Georgia, a huge matchup coming up this weekend. We're talking to Kentucky quarterback Terry Wilson for a couple more moments. You know, I've heard you talk about the fact that you've got a championship-winning mentality and that you have to have a certain mindset playing quarterback, and you've got to have that. You certainly do. But how would you describe a championship-winning mindset, and where does it come from?
I feel like that starts in the offseason. And once I had gotten to Kentucky, our working habit, I felt like it shifted a little bit. You know, everybody was, you know, we were focused. Like, we were out there really working hard, and, you know, guys were out there doing a little extra, doing a little more. And I feel like it started right then. And, you know, once we got into camp, we were just rolling. Those 4 weeks, we were rolling, and everybody was just excited to be out there. There wasn't any complaining. There wasn't any, you know, fights going on at practice. There wasn't any distractions. Everybody was focused and knew what the goal was for this football team. And, you know, the championship mindset, I feel like you just have to do a little extra. You always have to do a little extra more. Championship teams do more. And, you know, that means watching a little bit more film when you're tired, getting a little more extra rest, you know, eating the right food, you know, taking care of your body so you can go out there and perform for your brothers out there on the field. So I feel like that all started in the off season, you know, to get the right mindset and just attack it day in and day out.
You know, Terry, last thought. I've spent some time in Lexington because we've owned some thoroughbred racehorses. It is a great town. I love Las Vegas. I think when a lot of people think about Lexington, Kentucky, though, they think about the horses. They think Kentucky basketball. They don't necessarily think of Kentucky football because it hasn't exactly been a powerhouse in the past. But this is all changing. This is all changing. What's it mean to you to have the opportunity that you have this Saturday? And how much does it mean for you to play in such a big or for you to play such a big role in putting this football program on the map?
It's huge, and we look at it just as, you know, another game. We just have to take care of what we have to take care of and do what we're supposed to do and, you know, not be too tensed up. Just go out there and let it rip and just play free. And I feel like it's a huge, huge opportunity and a huge deal for, you know, Lexington, Kentucky, and, you know, and for this university. Just to go out there and play in such a big game like that and have an opportunity to, you know, to win the SEC East.
That is the best way to look at that. That's an incredible opportunity. Kentucky ranked number 9, going up against number 6, Georgia. Let it rip. Got a chance to win that division. Terry Wilson, the quarterback at Kentucky, my guest. Terry, great job. Really nice to have you on. Appreciate the conversation. Good luck this weekend. We'll all be watching.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I do want to talk University of Maryland football because there is news from the University of Maryland football program. And that news is, they flat out do not give a damn. No matter what's reported, no matter what's said, no matter what they know, no matter what they hear, they simply do not give a damn. They made that abundantly clear with that disastrous press conference yesterday. Technically, their press conference was to announce that head football coach DJ Durkin would be staying on as head coach. But really, that was to announce that Maryland football, the University of Maryland, and the Maryland Board of Regents do not give a damn. They've got no shame. They've got no compassion. They've got no heart. They have no soul. They've got nothing. They're empty. They're morally and ethically bankrupt. Jordan McNair is gone. He was just 19 when he died. He died a preventable death. It should have never happened, but it did. And it happened on DJ Durkin's watch. And it happened because McNair was struggling for breath, ultimately fighting for his life, and trainers either ignored it or they saw it, and they didn't give a damn. And they didn't get him the help that he needed until it was much too late. But the program and the university really didn't care then, and they still don't care right now. What makes me say that? Why would I lay out and say something like that? I give to you Maryland Board of Regents Chairman Jim Brady.
We believe that Coach Durkin has been unfairly blamed for the dysfunction in the athletic department. And while he shares some responsibility, it is not fair to place all of it at his feet.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did Jim Brady just say that Coach Durkin has been unfairly blamed for the dysfunction in the athletic department? That it's not fair, quote, not fair to hold him accountable. A few short months after the death of Jordan McNair, did he really just say that Coach Durkin is the victim right here? How with you? DJ Durkin is not the victim right here. Jordan McNair was the victim. Jordan McNair's parents are the victims. They're the ones who lost a son. Jordan McNair's friends and teammates lost a brother. They're victims as well. And now they have to welcome back the guy who ran the program that oversaw his death. There are a lot of people who have suffered incredible pain as a result of all of this. There are victims. Jordan McNair's family, everybody who loved Jordan McNair. the one person who is not a victim is DJ Durkin. The fact that anybody, much less their board of regents, thinks so is one of the more deplorable things I think I've ever heard. A 19-year-old kid is dead, but the coach who oversaw the culture which produced that is the victim? That's what you said. The coach is the victim. One of the worst takes ever. Now, for the record, Durkin came on this show in the past. He came off well. He did a nice interview. He seemed like a nice guy. But he's a terrible football coach. You can look at his record if you want, but I'll just go by the fact that he clearly cannot run a football program. There is a report the size of a novel that can tell you that. But sure, go ahead, Jim Brady. Make sure everybody knows that DJ Durkin is the victim here and that he's been unfairly blamed for the entirely preventable death of a player. He's been unfairly blamed for a toxic culture in the program that he was supposed to run. He's been unfairly blamed for making his first hire a guy who threw weights at players, berated those players, threw a garbage can of vomit at those players. You know, the program, it wasn't sadistic. It was just intense. And those video sessions during meals of drills going into eyeballs and serial killers and animals eating other animals, they were just designed to increase mental toughness and grit. It's not sick. It's not twisted. The rest of you just don't get it. When you tell me that's what that process was, that that was Durkin's process and that it was a damn good process and you only have to trust the process. And that if you don't start every morning by seeing a drill go into somebody's eyeball or honor a serial killer like Jeffrey Dahmer, then obviously you just don't want it badly enough. Isn't that right, Brady? Is that what you're telling us? And maybe you are onto something. Maybe it's not fair that DJ Durkin has to go through all of this. I mean, what did this guy ever do besides have some kid die on his watch and make all of his teammates watch eyeballs get drilled out of other dudes' heads at breakfast? I'm telling you, after seeing that press conference and hearing that decision, I've got one question for the people who are calling the shots at Maryland. Question being, are you all morons or are you cowards? Because only a moron or a coward would retain a head coach after all the evidence that's been presented. Only somebody who had no soul would do that. But don't take my word for it. Listen to Martin McNair, the father of Jordan McNair. He spoke publicly yesterday for the first time since August.
I feel like I've been punched in the stomach and somebody spit in my face.
I mean, the fact that this was even a discussion, that Durkin had not already been fired, that the 8-person commission that looked into the football program worked that hard to try to say that the program was not toxic, even when it presented a mountain of evidence that showed that it was exactly that, toxic. You knew this was coming. The longer it went without this guy losing his job, the more likely it was that he was coming back to that job. You know, I get it. The business of college football is scummy. And when you peek behind the curtain, you get to see the sausage and how it's made, and it's disgusting. Ohio State retaining Urban Meyer after everything that went down was revolting. But in a very cold world, one with no standards or morals, you come to expect it. It makes sense. The guy's won a hell of a lot of football games for them. He's made a hell of a lot of money for them. They're going to choose football and money over integrity and standards and doing the right thing every single time. But for Maryland to do that, I'm not clear on what they're choosing. You're going to bat for a coach who had a player die during practice, a coach whose right-hand man was throwing weights at players, berating them with slurs, and a coach who was showing players videos of drills going to eyeballs and serial killers while they were eating. Let me tell you something. If you're going to do all that, if you're going to do all that, you shouldn't. But if you're going to do all that, that coach better damn well be worth it. He better be Bill Belichick, Bill Walsh, and Bill Parcells all rolled into one. But I'm not even sure that DJ Durkin is Bruce Coslett or Brady Hoke. Durkin is 10-15. The interim coach, this season is 5-3. They got better when Durkin wasn't there. Never mind the fact that there's no way this guy can ever recruit. There's no way he'll be able to go into somebody's living room and look a parent in the eye and say, I'll take care of your son. I will take care of your son. I mean, Maryland is so jacked up right now. The fact that this hurts recruiting isn't even in the top 50 issues that's facing them. So what I'm saying is this. There's so many different options for Maryland here, and they battled and they fought their way to take the worst possible option. For who? For what? So you can compete in the Big Ten? You just sold out for a coach who loses 60% of his games. Or maybe that's not it. I mean, did you do that so you wouldn't have to pay his buyout? Did you do that so you wouldn't have to buy the AD out who oversaw the whole disaster? Because if that's the case, apparently we now know the cost of Maryland's integrity. It's not very high. And there are multiple reports of multiple players walking out of a team meeting with DJ Durkin yesterday. Good for them. But tell me again. Tell me again how Durkin is the victim. Tell me again how the coach has been treated unfairly. He still has his job. The AD still has his job. The university president still has his job. And the fact is, they don't give a damn. Not about their players, and most of all, not about a 19-year-old kid who died. Otherwise, they would not have brought back the coach who had it happen on his watch and then try to convince the entire world that he was the one who was wronged. Maryland could not have handled one of the worst situations ever any worse than they did. And if it sounds like I'm pissed, it's because I am. And I'm shocked that everybody's not. Gardner Minshew. Gardner, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Yeah, I'm awesome, man. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you on. All right, so let me go back to Saturday night first. For a moment, your team fell behind by a couple of TDs in the first half, but watching that game, it seemed like nobody panicked at all. Knowing how explosive your offense is, what was going through your mind when Stanford took that big lead in the first half?
Yeah, well, we moved the ball early, and we just kind of got in our own way with some penalties and some different things, some miscommunications. So we just knew whenever we started clicking that we'd be able to get back in the game. And there's never really a doubt that we could win it. I think that's something that's pretty special about this team that, you know, we've kind of put ourselves in some tough situations. But, you know, that belief that we're going to win, I think, carries us a long way.
Well, that's what happened. You got back in the game, of course, and you take the lead. Then Stanford ties the game with 1:25 left. 85 seconds is not a lot of time for most teams, but when you consider the fact that you had three timeouts and you've got that confidence that you just mentioned in the offense, how were you feeling at that point?
Yeah, 1:25 and three timeouts is a situation we'd love to have. And you know, we felt good moving the ball. We were pretty hot that second half. So, I mean, we knew we were going to go down to score. We wanted to score a touchdown. But, you know, we ended up giving a chance to our kicker, and he came through, Blake Mazza, and he came through for us.
Gardner Minshew joining us. You know, the team is in the middle of a great season, but as some people know, you've only been in Pullman for a few months now. You're a graduate transfer from ECU, and the thought was that you might go to Alabama. Mike Leach says he gave you a phone call at one point. What do you remember about that call, and what did he say to you?
Yeah, so he hit me up, kind of explained their situation, and, you know, he kind of ended it with asking me if I want to come lead the country in passing. And that was so cool to me, and you know, just the whole idea of coming here, competing for playing time on a team that, you know, I thought had a chance to be really good, you know, was too good to pass up.
Listen, he did say that to you. Do you want to come here and lead the country in passing? And he was serious about that. And sure enough, you lead the country in passing. So what do you make of that? I mean, is that kind of like, yeah, this is what I expected. This is what he said. And I expected it.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely, it's exciting. You know, you always have a chance in this offense with how much we throw the ball. But yeah, it's been incredible. Coach Leach has, you know, given me so much trust and, you know, put me in a position to succeed. And man, I'm just grateful for the opportunity, really.
Finish that thought for a minute, because there's no coach like him. There is no coach like Mike Leach in America. What's it been like to play for him? And has that part been pretty much what you expected?
Yeah. You know, all I really knew was, you know, what you see on TV, some of the interviews, some of the sound bites you get. But yeah, that's him all the time. He's not putting on an act or anything. He's genuinely him 100% of the time, and it's so much fun. And you know, obviously as a coach, the offense that we're running is awesome. He puts so much on my shoulders, which I appreciate him trusting me. So, yeah, it's a blast playing for him.
Gardner Minshew joining us. He always talks about that, too, man. I mean, we're in this to win it. Obviously, we want to develop some character, but we want to have fun. And you mentioned how much fun it is. What about developing the chemistry that you have with your young receivers? I mean, again, you haven't been there that long, and you've got some young receivers, and it seems like you got on the same page with them pretty quickly. How were you able to do that?
Yeah, man, it was just a lot of work. You know, it started this summer and carried on into camp, and you know, I feel like we've even gotten a lot better as the season's gone on, and that's been one thing coaches stressed is, you know, get 1 week better each week. And, man, I think we're doing that. I think we had 10 receivers that caught multiple passes last week. I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, we got so many guys that can step up and make plays that have my trust. So, I mean, it's pretty awesome throwing those guys.
So, once again, you're not going to make it about you, but the fact is you're getting some run as a possible Heisman Trophy candidate. What's your reaction when you hear your name and the Heisman mentioned together?
Man, it's incredible. It's, you know, it's something you dream of. You know, I remember watching, you know, every Heisman ceremony as long as I can remember. And it's always been something I've aspired to do. You know, but the biggest thing is, you know, if we keep winning games, then – you know, that conversation will keep happening. That's all I can really control, you know.
Gardner Minshew is my guest. Now, your mustache is getting a lot of run and a lot of attention, and to me, it deserves it. How much power is there in that stash?
Oh, the power of the stash is unparalleled. It's something else. It has a life of its own, and there's no question that that is the greatest single factor to our success as a team this year.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. Gardner, on the outside looking in, it seems to me that's apparent. It always seems to me also, too, that if you're a quarterback and you're going to rock a mustache, you better be a damn good quarterback. There's power that comes with a stash, as you point out, but there's also great responsibility to live up to the great stashes that have come before you. Do you feel that? Is that true?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, like you said, with great power comes great responsibility. So I'm just trying to wield it the best I can, and yeah, if we start losing or something, then the mustache starts to look pretty dumb at that point.
All right, so who are some of the mustaches that came before you that you respected?
Oh, the mustaches. You know, just in football, the two that stick out to me is, you know, Aaron Rodgers had his for a little bit. He had a pretty wicked handlebar for a second. Then he had just a, you know, really thick mustache. That was impressive. And then, you know, Baker Mayfield, I think it was for the Oklahoma State game. That would always get me pretty fired up. But then, you know, ultimately, the greatest of all time of mustaches, my personal icon, Burt Reynolds, rest in peace. That is definitely the, he is the gold standard when it comes to mustaches.
Dude, you absolutely nailed that. That is so true. That was so true. So, I mean, you're kind of a younger dude. When you look at some of his movies, what were your favorite movies, and why did he have such kind of an impact? Why was he your icon?
Well, the one movie that sticks out to me is Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
I had it on VHS. I mean, I remember watching it as young as I can remember. I've probably seen that. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it. You know, just always wanted to be the bandit in the dang Trans Am. Yeah, that always just got me fired up. He's a renegade.
God, dude, this guy, for a young guy, for you to understand that, you're kind of an old soul. Man, Burt was so cool. That movie was so awesome. That rig was so great.
Incredible.
Man, he was just wisecrack. He had everything, man. Burt was awesome. Burt was so cool.
Yeah, there's no question. That's just him. And what a role. Him and Jerry Reed, you know, taking down to Texarkana. Just good times, man.
Gardner, you get it. I know you get it watching the way you play. Pullman is kind of a small town. I mean, it is a small town. What's it like kind of rolling around campus right now? The team's in the top 10. You've got it going on. You've got a great team. What's it like to be you on that campus right now?
Yeah, man, the energy's crazy here. You know, the mustache makes me pretty recognizable, I must say. So, you know, I have people coming up asking for pictures and stuff. Been seeing some Halloween costumes with some mustaches. That's been pretty crazy. But, man, one thing I always tell people about Pullman is it's really cool because I think there's 33,000 people, 26,000 are students. So if you're here, you're here for Washington State. And it kind of gives it, you know, a close-knit family feel. And that's been pretty awesome so far.
You know, it's amazing. You have the whole experience. Like, you're playing at a really high level, and you're getting a lot of attention, and you're handling this beautifully. But the fact of the matter is you thought about going to Alabama because you were thinking about life after football and maybe getting into coaching. How close did that come? Was that a real possibility at one point?
Oh, 100%. You know, I got to say I'm so grateful for Coach Saban for offering me that opportunity. And, you know, being a GA for him, that's like going to, you know, Harvard for coaching. And that'd be incredible. But at the end of the day, my heart's in playing. That's what all I've wanted to do since for as long as I can remember. And, you know, when the coaching comes, you know, Coach Leach has one of the best trees in college football, one of the biggest trees. He's got an influence all over the game. So I think I'm in as good a spot here as anywhere.
All right, so one last thought. You've been a part of some legendary basketball games, too, on a court near the Methodist Church back home in Mississippi. Your friend, I think Houston Smith, right, said that he thinks that over the years that you've maybe only lost a handful of times. What were those games like, and how heated did they get?
Oh, those are the most intense games I've ever played. I think it's really prepared me for football, because football is a little more tame than the Methodist Church basketball games.
Great.
But, yeah, I try to rip people's heads off in basketball, Mamba mentality, and just try to dominate everybody in the church.
Dude, Mamba, that's great. The Mamba mentality. Were you a Kobe Bryant guy?
Yeah, I appreciate Kobe, but, man, I'm a LeBron guy. You know, greatest of all time. Just throwing that out there.
Chapel Hill, Tobin to the front of the line. Hey, Tobin, what's up?
Hey, Jim, thanks again for the vine. It's been a minute.
It has been. So what's up? Where
hey,
you been?
Maryland.
What's on your mind?
It's October 31st, not April 1st. Unbelievable. As a parent, I'm scared every day about Maryland. And speaking of fools, hey, Jeff Passan, have you ever heard of a landline? If you ever get invited to another smack-off, how about not using your dumb phone? It is Halloween, and NCAA hoops are right around the corner, so of course I have some questions about Mike Krzyzewski. I'm not going to go personal appearance, of course, because his name is not Grant Napier, but I have some deeper questions about his essential humanity. To wit, when is the last time someone saw him in direct sunlight? Why has none of his lettuce changed color or moved since 1987? Did he bum a wig from one of those guys in Devo back then, or is this indicative of a deeper problem? What I'm asking you, Jim, is has anyone seen his china lately, specifically his incisors? What I'm saying is I think his bed's got a lid on it, and that is not a Casper mattress in there. And speaking of his house, there aren't any mirrors in there, not because of personal appearance, but because he simply cannot use them. In comparison, or should I say in contrast, at least Coach Roy has gone a little bit of salt and pepper on the top and wears some spectacularly mismatched attire, whereas Krzyzewski always looks like he's dressed for a funeral. What I'm saying is he's comfortable around coffins. Now let me get back to the smack-off for just a minute. The best part of that whole thing was tape recorder in Richmond being left on hold the entire time. I just love that. I'm sure he had a horrible cramp in his finger poised over the play button. Unfortunately, you did allow some of your precious time to his imitator in Buffalo. But man, I mean, he's a fan of the Buffalo Dills. So that's all you need to know. I'm going to be opening up a lot of Wonka bars between now and next summer, unless you save me the time. And I'm also going to say, War, giving Sexy Rexy from New Mexico a golden ticket based on his delivery alone. Out.
Tobin's like in awe. He can't believe that I let him finish that call. That was so spectacularly horrible that I couldn't wait for it to end. I didn't want it to ever end.
I'm an
alien.
I'm not afraid of you!
Someone call someone!
You better don't.
Look out. Jay!
Good night now!